Okay, the next matter up and the last matter on today's docket is 67071, State versus Jackson. Mr. McDonald, are you ready to proceed? Okay.
May it please the court, counsel, good morning. The crime spree that is the subject of this case began when respondent Natasha Jackson and her paramour, Cody Winters, began a desperate search for a vehicle. First, they stole an Altima. When that ran out of gas, they hijacked at gunpoint the service worker who stopped to aid them. They then forced the service worker into a neighborhood and randomly selected the Ramos household. They committed a home invasion there and began to get in a tussle with Richard Ramos over the gun. Natasha Jackson assisted in that and demanded the gun and demanded car keys. Richard Ramos was shot and they fled into an abandoned house. In that house, police arrived and they engaged in a hostage ruse. Eventually, she lured police and told Cody to shoot at them. Eventually, Cody was killed and Natasha was captured. This case went to the grand jury and they returned an 8-count indictment, including 2 counts of burglary while in possession of a firearm. Count 1, as to the Ramos residence. Count 8, as to the abandoned house. This was then subject of a pretrial habeas petition, wherein the court granted the petition and ordered the state to amend the indictment, striking counts 1 and 8 in their entirety. That is the subject of the appeal today. The first point I'd like to start with is the error in striking the counts in their entirety. The only point that the district court accepted in the pretrial petition was the defendant's argument that Natasha Jackson did not have actual possession of the firearm. The district court accepted that point only and denied all other points raised in the petition. And it struck the count in its entirety. And this is additionally troubling given the fact that the judge specifically found that there was slight marginal evidence to support the burglary in count 8, but yet struck the count in its entirety instead
rather
of
than just striking
the enhancement.
The enhancement.
Correct. So our contention is that this is substantial error, that the remedy should have been to strike only the enhancement in this case. The respondent makes an argument that somehow the district court is precluded from striking only the enhancement and cites to the Grant case. But if you read the Grant case, it only talks about ordering an amendment to an indictment in the context of or permitting the state to amend an indictment or a charging document in the context of prejudice to the defendant and notice to the defendant. Obviously, that's not an issue here. So for that reason, the district court erred in striking the burglary entirely instead of just the enhancement, if you conclude that the court was correct as to the possession. As to the possession count, the respondent argued actual possession. The district court accepted that argument and said that the state failed to prove actual possession. The respondent now on appeal argues that possession should be actual. But the state's theory is, and always has been, that possession should be proven by a constructive theory. We cited in our brief to the Anderson and Jones line of cases that establishes that possession of a weapon can be sustained under a constructive theory. Now, a defendant on appeal now says that it must be actual and ignores that line of cases. So either the district court substantially erred in finding that the state failed to prove actual possession when its theory was constructive possession, or that line of cases should be overruled.
Assuming you're correct in your theory that constructive possession applies, what facts support that theory?
Yes, and that's where I'm going right now. To prove constructive possession, we had to provide slight or marginal evidence that she knew about the gun. She clearly knew about the gun. In her interview, she described it in detail. She described that she had held it and warned the police that her fingerprints would be on the gun. She described where Cody Winters kept it on his person as a matter of habit and practice. We're also required to prove that she had the ability to control the weapon. She ordered Richard Ramos to return the weapon to her. She ordered Cody Winters to shoot at the police when she had lured them into a vulnerable position. So clearly she had the ability to control. Now, respondent makes an argument that there's no ability to control the weapon because she never possessed the weapon. She never held it in her hands for a brief period of time. While we don't know that that's true, there's no evidence to state that that is the case. However, this theory would kind of obviate the constructive possession theory. It would basically require actual possession to prove constructive possession in this context and in this context only. So, unless there are any questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Any questions? All right. Okay.
Thank you, Justices. Dan Silverstein on behalf of the Clark County Public Defender's Office and Ms. Jackson. May it please the Court. I'd like to start out with a quote from dissenting opinion from Sheriff versus Miley. In pretrial habeas matters, the function of the district courts is to screen out cases in which the proof is so tenuous as to not justify a trial. In some cases, a district judge's proper exercise of this function entails the exercise of considerable fortitude. Furthermore, unless district judges continue to show such fortitude, our trial courts will become clogged with accusations which, lacking evidentiary support, either cannot succeed at trial or else cannot be sustained on appeal. The surest way I can think of to discourage district judges from screening out tenuous accusations is to convey the message that this court will be quick to locate error whenever a district court makes such a judgment call against the prosecution in a case involving ugly facts. And this case does involve ugly facts. And that is why the briefs and the argument all start with a recounting of those ugly facts. But those ugly facts are not controlling of the issue before this court. The question is whether or not Judge Walsh committed substantial error in granting this petition.
What's your rendition of those ugly facts, counsel?
Well, my obviously, I'm not going to take issue with the facts as they were stated in the brief. I mean, there was a crime spree, and most of it was committed by the co-defendant who was shot and killed by the Metropolitan Police Department, Cody Winters. My client was present. My client was with him. My client was charged with every single thing that he did. However, Cody Winters held the gun.
Your position is that actual possession is required.
No.
Okay.
That is certainly not my position.
Then what I'm trying to determine is the statements to us in the record indicates that she knew there was a gun, and she had actually touched the gun, and she had made statements to Mr. Winters with regard to actual use or non-use of the gun.
Well, first of all, I'd like to point out the standard that the trial court is the most appropriate forum to decide these issues, and that the record, the appellate court function is to decide whether there was substantial error in deciding it the way she did, and I don't believe the ruling in this case presents substantial error. First of all, there was a continual blurring of the distinction at the trial court level between possession of a weapon and use of a weapon. There were several charges that have the use of a deadly weapon enhancement. I didn't even challenge those because I believe the law is clear that you can use a weapon if you merely derive a benefit from its presence. However, the state is trying to take that analysis and apply it to the possession element and say that because she may have derived a benefit from the presence of her co-defendant's weapon, that she was in possession of that weapon as well as could be charged with using it. And that is simply not the case. There was no possession here because she didn't have the ability to exercise control over that weapon. Regardless of whether or not she actually had the weapon in her hands, it's irrelevant. She had no ability to exercise control over that weapon. At every time, at all times during this crime spree, Cody Winters had the gun. There was a time that he fought over it with one of the victims in this case. But Ms. Jackson never had the weapon, never had the ability to exercise control over that weapon. Control is the essence of possession.
I think it's a great argument on appeal if you're convicted, but I don't think it's a great argument at habeas corpus, at the writ state. I mean, we're talking about slight and marginal evidence, and I think that Justice Perry certainly said there was slight and marginal evidence of constructive possession. And you even admit that there can be constructive possession in an enhancement.
Well, I'm not conceding there was constructive possession in this case.
We'll never concede. That's the worst thing. I think you admit it.
First of all, I think that it's inaccurate to term this an enhancement. The possession here is not an enhancement. It is an element of a separate offense. This was charged under NRS 205-060 subsection 4, burglary while in possession of a firearm. This is not an enhancement. This is a separate offense charging burglary while in possession. It's a separate element. So the argument that she merely could have kicked the enhancement and thrown out the possession alone, that's not accurate. Ms. Jackson was charged under this very specific subsection. The court found no probable cause to make out a violation of that specific subsection.
Could the state then have amended the indictment?
Possibly.
To have two counts of burglary instead of burglary with the use of a firearm?
They certainly could have moved to amend, and it would be up to the trial court whether or not to grant that motion. I don't think that, I believe the state has argued to this court that the trial court had some sort of an obligation to only kick the possession element and not the burglary, and I simply don't agree with that. The court doesn't have an obligation to help the prosecution. The court's not there to fix their mistakes. If a mistake was made in charging, then they should have filed a motion to amend or gone back to the grand jury and tried to reindict on simple burglary charges, but that wasn't done.
So murder with use of a deadly weapon, if you kick the deadly weapon, you kick the murder?
If you bring a habeas petition on count one, murder with use of a deadly weapon, and the court finds a lack of probable cause, the court has the power to dismiss the entire charge. I do believe that. Does not have to, is not obligated to do so, but certainly has the authority to do so. And that is what the trial court did here. And I simply don't, I cannot agree that the court committed substantial error. This may not be a decision that you would have made. It may not be a decision you would have made had you been in the trial court. But that's not the standard. The standard here is even though the decision went against the state, that doesn't make it erroneous. And the facts in this record certainly allow for the conclusion that Ms. Jackson had no ability to exercise control over that weapon. Simply shouting at somebody who has a weapon is not the ability to exercise control. What the state wants to do here is change the possession law so that you can be convicted of possession merely with knowledge. It would be like saying that you could be charged with possession of a stolen vehicle because you accepted a ride in the car, because you're deriving a benefit from that stolen vehicle. That's not the law. It's not mere knowledge. You have to have the ability to exercise control. You have to have the keys to that car. You have to have access to the medicine cabinet where the drugs are stored. You have to have exclusive control over that item in order to be legally in possession of it. And Ms. Jackson, even though she was present with someone with a weapon, and even though I'll concede she derived a benefit, and she is absolutely on the hook for the use enhancements, but not for possession. Because possession requires something use does not. It requires control and the ability to exercise control. And despite the fact that Cody Winters shot at those police, and despite the fact that she may have, again, I think the factual record is not clear on this, whether or not she actually made physical contact with the gun. But even conceding that's true, even if she made some slight de minimis contact with the gun, she never had the ability to exercise control over it. Cody Winters was the gunman here.
I think it's a great argument on appeal, but I don't think it's a great argument at the writ stage. I just don't. I just don't see it. I think that when you talk about marginal evidence, slight evidence. I think we've got slight evidence here. So would I have done it differently than Judge Walsh? Probably.
Well, again, I mean, if...
But it could be an argument down the line after, you know, a jury trial. Considering the nature of the counts here, I'd say to both sides, this case, of course, should be negotiated. There's no doubt. Thank God.
Is that an order?
No. Good luck to you on this one.
Well,
I mean, if you prevail on this, you win the battle and lose the war as to what this woman faces.
Well, and I agree, Your Honor. I don't think that this was the wisest appeal in terms of judicial efficiency. I simply don't.
I was going to say that. I'm glad you said that because I agree with you.
Two minor charges in a murder case with kidnapping and robbery charges, much higher penalties. I'm not sure the rationale behind appealing this rather than just asking to reconsider in the trial.
That's the type of week we've had here between the pro bono relocation cases and now this case. I feel the same way.
You could send a message to the state on this one. I mean, you certainly have the authority to do that.
My message may not be one that the defense bar would like in this particular case.
Oh, it really is.
On writs. Having filed writs for umpteen years in the district court. And sometimes prevailing.
I will also point out that at the time that the trial court decided this issue, there was no case law at all interpreting or defining the NRS 205-060 subsection 4, which is what Ms. Jackson was charged under. There was no specific case law on burglary while in possession. There was a lot of argument that kind of was a hybrid of the use of a deadly weapon analysis. I would also point out that any argument on the part of the state that the court ignored the constructive possession analysis or simply failed to consider it, I don't believe that it can be assumed that the trial court simply ignored that element of the argument. I think that the trial court's order said that there was no probable cause to find possession, and I think that there are a number of cases in which other courts have said that we will not assume that the district court ignored any relevant matter or ignored any relevant theory. That's U.S. versus Gabriel.
Generally, the court gives us a crumb to find what you're talking about, though. So where do we find that crumb to make that connection?
The connection that she did consider constructive possession ruled in my favor, the fact that there was no evidence in the record under which to assume that Ms. Jackson exercised any control whatsoever under that weapon. There's simply no facts in the record to say that Ms. Jackson had control.
Was constructive possession even mentioned?
Constructive possession was mentioned. The state brought it up at oral argument in the district court, yes.
And presented the facts they wanted to present to support that.
Yes, Your Honor.
And she essentially then found there was no even marginal evidence to support that.
That's correct.
Okay.
I don't believe that was substantially erroneous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, you've got about 8 minutes left.
I'll not need 8 minutes. Let me read from the order. The state failed to present slight or marginal evidence that Ms. Jackson had actual possession of a firearm or deadly weapon during the commission of a burglary. That is the order that he's trying to defend. There is no evidence that the district court made any consideration as to constructive possession. It's not reflected in her order. It's not reflected in her oral pronouncement on this issue. So I don't see where the district court properly considered constructive possession and then dismissed the counts on that basis. There's evidence of constructive possession. We disagree about that. The degree of control. He says control. But the requirement in the law for constructive possession is ability to control. It's simply the ability. It's not the actual exercise of control in the record. She had the ability. She participated in these crimes with him. She demanded the gun from Ramos when they were struggling, and at one point when Cody was losing that struggle, she assisted in restraining the wife when the wife came and stabbed her in the back with a screwdriver. She is clearly a participant in this crime. She derived a benefit from it, and she constructively possessed this weapon when the burglary occurred at the Ramos residence and the abandoned residence.
And your position is that the state presented evidence to the grand jury that indicated Jackson almost certainly knew about the firearm and her co-defendant's actual possession and presented at least slight and marginal evidence that Jackson could control the firearm?
Yes. And I mean, as far as the knowledge, I think the knowledge is a slam dunk given her statements and, you know, description of the unprompted description of the weapon as a black 9mm that she had held before. She knew he kept it in his waistband, on his leg sometimes, and she obviously knew that he had it that day because she was there when he was putting Scott Uford at gunpoint.
I have nothing.
Any questions?
Nothing. Okay. Counsel, thank you for your arguments in this case, and the case will stand submitted. This court will stand in recess until the next call of the court.